Well, good morning. Welcome to the Roundtable. It is a Thursday morning. It's October 3rd, and very nice to have you all with us. We are very happy to have you here. Now that the group has assembled, let us get started. We have quite a group this morning. I also want to, we'll get into this in a second, but I want to remind you about the lockbox as well. First, let me introduce everybody. Albany County District Attorney David Soares is here. He missed us last week. So then we asked, well, do you want to do twice next week, meaning this week? So you'll be here today and tomorrow. So you have a two-night engagement.
How lucky do you get?
Well, yeah, I'm an opening act today, and tomorrow I'm supposed to be a featured act. So.
I'm just glad you're here. That's excellent. Judy Patrick, fresh from a media project taping. She is primed and ready to go.
Ooh, what a rowdy session.
A rowdy session. You're ready to go now.
Lord. Yes. All right. A little bit of back and forth this morning.
Vice President for Editorial Development at the New York Press Association, longtime editor of the Daily Gazette in Schenectady. All right. We also welcome our good friend Malcolm Nance, counterterrorism expert, MSNBC contributor, best-selling author. I just got a galley of your book on my desk yesterday. It looks good.
The new one, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Comes out in November.
Yeah, it comes out November 12th. That's The Plot to Betray America. And I love that Nancy Pelosi the other day practically quoted it by saying, "This is a betrayal to the Constitution." And I thought, that's the underscore of the whole book.
Can a brother get a signed copy?
Why yes. At some point, there'll be a Linda event, I'm sure.
Yes. We're working on that now. Good morning. Alan Chartok, hello. How are you, sir?
Hello. Well, I was stung by a bee yesterday. Went into anaphylactic shock, but now I'm all better.
So what happened? Did your?
I went to the hospital.
Well, was your breathing? Is that what goes or what happened?
No, but my whole body turned red, welts and stuff like that. I never thought it would happen. I've never been stung by a bee or wasp, whatever it was. And boy, it was some experience. But the good people at Fairview Hospital saved me, as usual.
Do you think that bee has gone back to the hive now, buzzing around, talking about politics, telling everybody they're wrong?
Actually, that bee is in another place.
Yes,
now.
I think they've gone to their...
Yeah, he's in the Cuomo administration.
Yeah. Oh, all right. Well, there you go. So that's what kind of morning it's going to be. Welcome, everybody. Let's talk about the lockbox for a second. Alan, this is cool. We're almost at $200,000, but we're not there yet, so we need to get there. It's $194,000 that we have raised, $194,787 to be exact. 305, 213 to go, 2.5 weeks until the fund drive begins on October 21st.
Uh-oh.
And don't forget, we have Capital Steps tickets for $150. And, yes, uh-oh.
And we all get together for the Capital Steps. It's not only how great they are, but it's also a time when a lot of WAMCers get together and pat each other on the back and said, well, we survived another year. And we will, if everybody does something and shows the passion, which we know that everybody has towards this radio station. It's just been wonderful to watch. We're right where we should be. We'll make it. Now comes the run-up to the $500,000, and we can do it if everybody puts a little something in. And if you step aside and you go the other way, well, then that's like an election where you forgot to vote and the other guy won.
That's right. So it's 2.5 weeks. The fund drive begins on October 21st, and just $300,000 plus to go. So we
can
do
get
it.
There. We can get there. We're going to get there. We got Malcolm Nance today. Come on. You don't bring a guy like this in just talk.
David Soares. I mean, that's the way it is.
And Judy Patrick.
Here.
And Judy. Who had to suffer through,
a little back
arrows,
and forth, yeah.
A real back and forth today on the media project. Me versus everybody.
It should be.
I'm just so curious now. I got to know about it.
6 o'clock Sunday.
I think we're going to relive it here in about 2 seconds. Wow. It's all right. Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome. WAMC.org to help the lockbox. 1-800-323-9262 to call us up and to do the same. We welcome your letters as well. Panel@WAMC.org. If you want to get in on our discussion this morning, you can do it that way. Panel@WAMC.org. What an afternoon it was at the White House. The poor Finnish president walks in, and and just sits there and watches the show. He had a great seat. I'll give him that. He had a great seat.
But you know, Joe, I think you had to listen really carefully. But I think he got his ups.
He got
his ups with one short statement. And just to remind everybody what it was, there was Trump going off on the reporter and yelling at the reporter and talking about how corrupt the press was and all the rest of it. And he says, ask the Finnish guy the question. Stop asking me about, you know, my little telephone conversation. So the reporter finally gives in, asks the guy. What happens? The president answers the question on the behalf of the Finnish president, and then the guy says, the president says, or prime minister says, I thought he asked me that question. That was great.
The other part that was great is when he said, I was here, I was visiting your monuments, I was visiting your museums, you have a lovely democracy here, I hope you can keep it up.
Echoes of was it Ben Franklin?
Yeah. It just seemed, exactly. It seemed to be like, what you had here was lovely. I hope it's still here the next time I come visit.
Good luck with that.
You know, the best part of that whole press conference wasn't shown on television. It's when he brought his dog. The Finnish president brought his dog out. And it was a beautiful, funny-looking dog from Finland who I think he should have had on his lap the whole time with President Trump, and it would have made it at least watchable.
Bring a dog and have that dog stand next to the germaphobe. That's great.
Like I said, it would have been eminently watchable.
And my favorite part of it was when the Finnish reporter asked the Finnish president if he had been asked for, or what favors the president had asked him to do.
Yes, and also there were some good shots in there, but you had to get through all of the other bloviation going on. So let us begin with the subpoena threat. We'll start there. We're not fooling around, the House Democrats say. They are vowing to subpoena the White House. The president sort of maybe said that he would comply. We don't really know. I don't know what he said exactly. But President Trump angrily struck back at Democrats in sometimes profane terms, calling them dishonest and corrupt as they pursue impeachment. Representative Elijah Cummings of Maryland, the chairman of the Oversight Reform Committee, notified his panel of the impending subpoena on Wednesday. He said the White House had thus far ignored voluntary requests he submitted with the House Intelligence and Foreign Affairs Committee. I do not take this step lightly, Mr. Cummings wrote. Over the past several weeks, the committee's tried several times to obtain voluntary compliance with our requests for documents, but the White House has refused to engage with or even respond to the committees.
So they're not fooling around. Why don't they just issue the subpoena? I mean,
that's a great question. You know,
the district attorneys tried to get this voluntarily for some reason?
Absolutely not. The only time that we are doing anything where we're seeking information without a subpoena is, for me personally, we do it in instances where there's civilian and law enforcement contact, where there's a shooting, and we want to be able to disclose as much as we can to the public after a decision has been made, in which case we will attempt to retrieve information by way of an instrument other than a subpoena. But when we're conducting an investigation, absolutely, it is a subpoena. We're not negotiating with people.
And David, do you have to have a grand jury behind that subpoena, or can you do it anyway?
No, you do have to have a grand jury. You go in and you open up a file, and then you can begin issuing subpoenas. And those subpoenas are returnable to the grand jury on the date that grand jury meets.
I think there's something to be said about the Congress taking the formal steps each time in warning the White House there's going to be a subpoena. And what should be said is that it's ridiculous. This White House has an utter contempt of the Constitution and of the House of Representatives. It's every time they think they want to play by the norms and they have to check a box, Donald Trump is given breathing space in order to discredit them.
Congress, it's almost like watching one of those old WWF matches where there's the classic good guy who shakes hands before the match begins. There's the tie-up, and then there's the cheater who rakes the eyes, gets the referee in the way. And at some point, and I know Alan and I have disagreed on a number of occasions about this,
But Jerry Nadler is perhaps one of the worst individuals to have taking taking a leadership position in the prosecution or the investigation of this White House. And it has been...
Why is that?
It has just been absolutely frustrating to watch the theater and continuing to watch people like Corey Lewandowski come before Congress and embarrass that body. The only reason why I have a little more hope right now with Adam Schiff is because he's a former prosecutor and his tone is correct, and his what he does seems to be acting with slightly more precision and authority than Nadler did.
But don't all six... I'm sorry, Al, go ahead.
I just want to say I'm a big Adam Schiff fan. I really am. And I think you're right. I think his tone is correct. We've had people on our panel saying he should be more aggressive and he should this and that. I don't think so. I think he is perfect for this role. And I grew up with Jerry Nadler, let me say that. And I watched him on the West Side. And I'm not entirely in disagreement with you.
So, but all six of the chairs of these committees that are overseeing this investigation really need to be on the same page, don't they?
They do need to be on the same page, which, let's get back to the war room issue, because I woke up this morning and I'm listening to some of the news and people are saying, you know, the president doesn't even have a war room. The only reason you develop a war room is to develop strategies and to execute. Here's a person who doesn't listen to anyone. So why would you be spending all your time and energy developing strategies when you know the person is going to go in front of a microphone and completely melt down? So what I think is happening right now, because we're operating and we're functioning, when I say we, I mean Congress, because we're functioning now as under the umbrella of an impeachment inquiry, I think we're starting to see them elevate the stakes. Because when you announce that you are, in fact, engaging in an impeachment investigation, you're also alerting the judiciary, because these issues of you're not going to cooperate with a subpoena, there's going to be expedited litigation. So I think that what you have right now is an advantage that is slightly leaning more towards Congress than in the past, where Trump wanted to run the clock out.
If he owns the courts now, which apparently he does, we're talking about the president. Do you have faith in the judiciary?
I do have faith, to the extent that we're not, it's not Adam Schiff and his staff that are going to be engaging in the litigation. It's going to be the top notch lawyers who also, and you know, a big alert here, lawyers do engage in forum shopping. That's the reason why you go up to the West Coast if you want to stop Trump's immigration, you know, if you want a ban on an immigration policy. And that's why you go to Texas when you don't want that ban. And I believe that there are still enough judges right now at the appropriate levels where a great litigation team can begin to employ to achieve their goals.
Right. I think the idea, the Pelosi plan that this is going to get done by Christmas is wishful thinking. I think we're still going to be dealing with this in the spring and even maybe early summer.
We said this last week that, first off, there was never a Pelosi plan apart from hold this off, no impeachment, let's get through the election, which exploded in her face because now all of this real evidence that's coming out, which was admitted to by the White House, just reframes everything that was done in the Mueller probe. We're now finding that this Ukrainian, this Ukrainian activity, coupled with State Department and the Attorney General's activity of going around the world, going to our allies, and actually using every branch of government to find dirt to discredit the Mueller probe, tells you that, one, they know the Mueller probe is likely true, and they have 1 year to discredit it. And now the Ukrainian probe is now deeply connected to that. There is no way this could get taken care of or could even start to be narrow. It's as the crimes are revealed, the 10 obstruction of justice counts from the Mueller probe are going to have to be added. And we're probably going to get 20 more when they start ordering people to absolutely do not talk to Congress, and his partisans come out and will not obey judges' orders or subpoenas or anything.
At the risk of my life, I want to disagree with you. I think.
Oh, thank God.
It's the bee talking. It's not him.
No, right. I truly believe that Pelosi looks good. It looks to me, it looks like she was doing the right thing. She was going slow. She was being very careful. And now it looks like she's done the right thing in saying, okay, full speed ahead based on the new evidence that we have. I'm a big Pelosi fan. I wasn't to begin with, but right now I think she looks good.
I was struck by the point that both she and Adam Schiff made during their press conference yesterday, where they warned the administration that any attempt to stonewall the House's request to intimidate witnesses would be construed as obstruction worthy of impeachment itself. So it seems, because that's an interesting point, too, is that we have all the things that you just mentioned and all of the stuff, but God only knows what's going to happen today, tomorrow, and the next day.
Well, the educated guess is that, first of all, let's understand that the conditions are different now than they were, let's say, a year and a half ago.
Just go 30 seconds.
A year and a half ago, you had some adults within the administration that were able to, you know, slightly convince this person to engage in certain behaviors and not to engage in certain behaviors. All of those people are gone. And so what you have right now is a president who's unhinged, who's actually going to establish his own defense. And that's going to work. It's going to be horrible for him.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We welcome your letters. They're already coming in. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll continue our conversation after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable panel. Alan Chartok, Malcolm Nance, Judy Patrick, and David Soares making up the group this morning. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. Let's go to the letters, and then we'll move on and talk about other aspects of this particular story. Kimberly writes, people who refuse to testify, why don't they just hold people in contempt of Congress and throw them in jail?
Me likey. And I think that that's exactly what happened. Ted Lieu had said in one of his tweets that the inherent power of Congress, the inherent contempt powers of Congress, need to be finally put out there. That when somebody is there and they lie on the stand or they say, I'm not going to answer your questions or exert some sort of crazy privilege that doesn't exist, that they should be arrested immediately, turned over to the sergeant of arms, which, by the way, you don't go into a jail under the Capitol. There is no jail under the Capitol. That's George Washington's sarcophagus. They are taken to a Washington, D.C. city jail, which is, at that point, they're going to wish there was a jail under the Capitol.
And there's no mice at the Washington, D.C. city jail like there is at the White House. Sorry.
One of the things
that I think has been truly disappointing is exactly as you articulate, the fact that Congress has not flexed its muscles in its entirety. But I don't know, at the same time, that you could feel that confident in doing it when the speaker wasn't necessarily behind you and you didn't necessarily have the will of the people behind you. I think that's changed now. And the people that are coming before Congress during this impeachment investigation, they will be held in contempt of court. And the fact that they don't cooperate is also going to be used as evidence of obstruction, which can be one of the charges that the House votes on and proffers.
So Kevin asks a specific question on this. How can the Trump administration just flat out not provide documents to Congress? Is there a fine, let's say, that the person would have to pay for defying orders to turn over documents or refusing to let State Department employees testify?
I think that's per se obstruction if, like what you had Pompeo writing the other day, which was just the most absurd thing, given the fact that he was a former member of that House, him trying to reframe the investigation as bullying. I mean, a guy who makes, you know, our former vice president, Mr. Cheney, look like a chorus boy.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, this guy accusing other people of bullying. But I will say that Friday, tomorrow, is a big day because we're expecting to have representatives from the state appear before Congress to provide information. If they do not, that's when the war will truly begin, and we'll see just exactly how much muscles the House has in its investigation.
Now, when is Volcker coming up? Is that today?
Tomorrow.
Volcker's up today, but it's a classified deposition, I think. It's right. Not a public hearing.
Well, that'll take about 3 seconds to leak out of there, right?
Yeah. And you know, another thing is that Pompeo ran the 7th Benghazi investigation, in which he demanded thousands of documents from State Department, which he got. And, you know, he's utterly bereft of all honor. I mean, he used to be, I mean, he's a West Point graduate whose motto is duty, honor, country. And their first core principle at West Point is they will not lie.
Okay, you're right, but there's a problem here. The problem is you got a Justice Department which is saying, hell no, we're not going to help you in any way, and we're not going to back you. The city, you know, you can take them to the city jail, but, you know, this is a pretty big operation, don't you think? And number two, this president says, no, I'm not going to do anything you ask. I won't do it. I just won't do it.
What you have what you have right now is a pretty interesting preliminary set of issues that
tough
have
noogies.
To.
I don't want to know
what? I'm using that because I'm gonna go get my street cred today by saying tough noogies to people. But. What you have is a very interesting set of legal facts that have to be addressed before we really get into the meat and potatoes of this issue. And that is what I believe to be an inherent conflict of interest for Barr as well as for Pompeo in maintaining their leadership positions within their respective agencies, because they were all somehow involved in the initial call.
And who calls that? Who says that? Is it going to be a court who says you're out because you were in conflict of interest?
That's going to be Adam Schiff taking it upon himself to begin filing that lawsuit so that there is a declaration by the judiciary on that specific issue.
Ideally, Barr should recuse himself.
Yeah.
Like,
Well, that's all of us sitting around the liberal table here saying that, and he should recuse himself, and you're certainly right. But they're not going to say that. They're not going to recuse themselves. It's ridiculous. This guy's a bully. We know that.
I am clearly of the mind that at some point here, not harboring that fantasy, by the way, that this is going to finish by Christmas, like you said, next summer, maybe. I am really of the mind that Barr will be impeached. He is going to have to be thrown under. I think he will get in the face of everybody. He will defy everybody, and he will dare them to impeach him. And then we're going to come up with the evidence that he was part of the conspiracy.
You could be right. You could be right about that. I have some confidence that this could be done by the holidays. And the reason why is because the issue is so crystal. It's so crystallized. It's not, you're not conducting a 2-year investigation where you have to subpoena records from banks that don't exist, you know, within your own borders. This is fairly a simple case if you keep it simple, and I think that's what the intention here is of the people who are investigating.
Not if we find that there are other information comes from that classified server that the president was promising Russia as part of this Ukraine factor, or promising Saudi Arabia. At that point, you have the exact same charge. It's just a question of adding more charges. So it could really snowball.
Yes, and then when that gets to the United States Senate, if it can be proven, and there's a long distance between lip and cup here, but if it can be proven that there was some kind of complicity with the Russians, then I think you got a possibility of a conviction.
Well, let me just quickly point out that as a former NSA collections operator, these transcripts are done by voice recognition software, as I understand it, and then they're rec-edited by people in the White House, which means there are transcripts. There could quite possibly be recordings, especially when it comes to translating Russian and in Ukrainian and in Arabic as it's interpreted there. So I don't know the level of evidence.
And how come we haven't seen any of that?
Well, this morning there was a deep discussion about the transcripts, that there are actually computerized transcripts. By the way, anything that's put onto that top secret classified server, as we said last week, that stuff does not disappear. You can't make it disappear. It goes into a cloud server that is uncrackable.
And where are all the whistleblowers about that?
Well, you know that there was talk last week that there were other complaints out there to the IG. So who knows?
To the old saying goes, talk schmuck. But at some point, it goes along with rough nuggies, tough nuggies. But,
tough nuggies. Rough nuggies.
Yeah, but I have to say, we haven't seen it yet, and it's going to take real guts for those whistleblowers to come forward. I hope they do. That'll be great.
Judy,
Is the transcript that we received last week of the phone call, is that a really good transcript? There are some calls, some questions made about that, there are some gaps there that we're not seeing that we should be able to see.
It's called the Memorandum of Telephone Communications, MemTelCon, and which is a summary of the transcript, which is also cleaned up and edited by transcribers.
It's cleaned up and edited, and here's the thing. If the White House thought that the cleaned up and edited version was so good that they felt comfortable releasing it,
perfect call.
Then the stuff that was really said must just be crazy.
Right, and we don't have access to that.
Well, and the president, and I know this is minor, but the president kept on saying yesterday, this is a complete transcript, this is a complete transcript, this is a complete transcript, and on the first page of it that they released, it says this is not a complete transcript. So I know. All right, let's go to some letters here, and then we'll take a quick break. Neil says, most media reports suggest Trump is calling Schiff a traitor simply because he is enraged. Nope, it's much more insidious. He's trying to convince his supporters that the summary that he released is a Democratic fake. And it's working. A Monmouth poll shows that 40% of Republicans don't believe he even mentioned Biden in the phone call. He has always relied on the ignorance of his supporters. This is more of the same. I don't know about the Monmouth poll. I do know that the numbers are just inching. Well, not even inching. They're soaring, really, of a swing in the last 10 days from those who were against impeachment who are now for the majority of Americans.
Let's forget. I mean, we're not really here talking about whether he's managed. You know, he's going to alienate that 38% to 40% that are firmly behind him. Those are the Jim Jones people. Okay, they're going to drink whatever Kool-Aid that.
No,
that
they are not the Jim Jones people. They are good old American Republicans.
Yeah, that's what we're. That is exactly. Yeah.
So are the people in Jonestown.
Yeah, exactly. But the point here, it's going to be not even the Democrats. It's the independents. Right?
That's right.
And I think that what we're seeing right now is a movement of the independents that are finally beginning to register. And that's the only reason why Congress and Nancy Pelosi is you know, firmly now in the impeachment world.
Yes, but Joe has been right about this right now. He just said it. The Republicans are beginning to defect also. And there are it's not the 95% that it was. It's the in the 80s now, and it's beginning to go down. And when that goes down low enough, you'll see Lindsey Graham and McConnell and the rest of those guys running for whatever rat hole they can find.
Right. For the long-term health of our country, those Trump supporters need to come around to this.
But how do you make them come around? When
you
in
tell
fact,
the truth.
They literally live in an alternate reality. And I speak to them regularly. They attack me regularly. They've threatened my wife and family. And I try to appeal to their better angels using my military position, my loyalty to the Constitution, and they don't care. And I'm appealing to them as my fellow citizens.
So why
they
are the
view
numbers
themselves
going,
as a so fellow why? as a different block of America?
So they are a different block of America. They don't, you know, we know that the racist part of them, and we know the misogynist part of them, and the rest of it. Nevertheless, with Tricky Nixon and the rest, you know that there'll be a falling off, and there has been a falling off, Malcolm. I'm seeing them, and they are not the people who drink the cola Kool-Aid. Well, they're just people who want their position in life maintained.
I agree with that, but let's not forget. I mean, we got a lockbox here that at some point we got to talk about, and that's important to talk about because this station provides the open kind of dialogue that I think people with different opinions can come and engage. And this is the living room conversations that I think should be taking place. But we know that all media is not like WAMC. We do know that there's Fox and other, you know, media, whether it's in the dark web or you can turn it right on your cable channel right now, that completely is presenting an entirely different reality. And as long as we continue to have social media and a media that just refuses to be honest with its viewers, then this is what we can expect. You're going to expect that solid 38% to 40%.
More letters and more discussion, but first the short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Kathy says, how does the panel feel about Elise Stefanik calling to censure Adam Schiff?
Well, she's played, she's playing the hand that she was dealt. She's a Republican. She knows what her constituents want, and she's going to mouth that off. Do I like it? I hate it. Personally hate it, but I think if you know the way the game is played, that's how she got herself elected. She's responding to the people who elected her, and that's what she's doing.
I'm going to be the Chartok translator right now. What he just said all means that Stefanik is an embarrassment. That's embarrassing.
Well, you could say it's embarrassing. But can you? But she's a survivalist. She wants to win again.
But
and
can
she knows
I?
This is the way to do it.
But can you? There is a difference though between saying I do not agree with the impeachment inquiry.
Right.
That's one thing, and then the second thing versus I believe that Adam Schiff should be censured.
Do I like it? But listen, this is very interesting. Nancy, earlier we thought that Jerry Nadler was a little bit of an embarrassment when he went out there. Remember that conversation?
Yes.
Now, Nancy Pelosi did a brilliant thing yesterday. She brought Adam Schiff out there with her. She did not bring any of the others. Basically, she was laying hands on him and saying, you're the guy who is running all of this. Mm-hmm. Don't you all agree with that?
Yeah, point, man.
I do, and that's part of the reason why I believe that the strategy... This strategy is one that I agree with, and I was loath, you know, towards the other strategy where you had hearings, one half of one particular committee was going to do hearings from 9 to 12, and then you had another committee coming in at 1 o'clock to 5 yeah. o'clock. That was just ridiculous. This is a simple issue, and I think the Democrats are doing well to maintain, you know, the appearance of simplicity here.
Right. You know, I'm in New York 19, and we have Antonio Delgado, who is on board now. But Stefanik, she's not just playing to her base in New York 21. She is playing to the rabid nature of her base out there. She just can't be a Republican representative of her people. If you are on the Trump train, you've got to be all the way onto the Trump train, or they will get rid of you as being essentially a leftist, right? Anyone who is not rabidly loyal. So I can understand her statement for censure, but it crosses all bounds of decency and common sense and good governance. I mean, to call for a censure of the man whose job it is to root out corruption in government, she's essentially saying, I approve of Donald Trump's behaviors, and she needs to be held accountable for her approval of Trump trying to extort enemies.
How do you do that?
Well, I mean, you...
Okay, in other words, she's got this constituency. Mm-hmm. We know where they are. We know what they're saying. You say she's got to be held accountable.
Sure. I mean,
do that?
You meta-narrative frame the way the Trump people do. You love the swamp. That's it. I mean, and she is now backing the swamp and throwing alligators in and until her constituents, I mean, granted, they like that. And if they want to vote for that, there's nothing anybody can do other
Malcolm,
than mobilize.
And her opponent, Tedrick Hobbs, is obviously all over this and is working the district. Who's running against Delgado?
No one as far as I know.
Because they're still running. The negative ads. Does anybody know that?
No, I'm not seeing them. They're not on Mid-Hudson Cable yet.
Oh, they're all over the place. I saw them for watching 2 hours of television yesterday. There was like 10 of them.
Let me tell you, I met Antonio Delgado's lovely wife. She came to my wife's memorial last week, Lacey Delgado, and boy, maybe the wrong Delgado. It was Congressman. She's a powerhouse. I think those two. Those two are incredible as a husband and wife team, and I think he's now representing the district the way he was brought in there. But I haven't heard any opposition from him yet. I'm sure there will be.
You know, I was surprised.
There definitely will be.
I was surprised Stefanik waded into this because she hasn't always gotten involved in these Trump scandals. But for some reason, and it seems early that she decided to get out there, and I don't know what the rationale for that is.
You got any theories, Judy?
She's not running for re-election right now. I mean, there's
well, you
a whole
got any
year.
Theories?
My theory is Stefanik weighing in. To me, establishes the desperation that this administration is certainly behaving in searching for allies. They will take allies anywhere that they can find them.
But I think this is closer to the Trump initial cabinet meeting where when they went around the table, you had to praise him.
Oh, yeah.
And I think she just jumped onto that very early because she feels it in her district that if she is not a sycophant, obsequiously adhering to the president's heel, then she will be out.
Well, if anyone here
big words
were observing the Sunday morning television, watching all the different medias and all the different people that were out there defending the president, if there was a scoreboard, would you say that they put any points on that board?
Negative.
Not last week.
It was a complete failure on every front. I don't believe that they were provided with enough information. I think that they were also being lied to, and they got caught being lying.
Well, the reporting was that they received their talking points for the weekend, and everybody looked at it and said, "We can't say this."
Yeah, but my point is, Plan B has to be, okay, let's reach out to all of the different Congress people all over the place. Let's find allies and let's begin to have them go out there and praise the president.
Okay, so what's the threat and what's the reward, the potential reward, right? Let's do it that way. Is the threat you'll get a primary opponent? I don't think so. They can't do that to her. A young, relatively young woman, the leader of that group and from the Republican Party, I don't see how they can do that by offering. So there's got to be a positive reward. Yeah, you get something else if you do this.
Yeah, there's a position or something coming for her because that's what they. And plus, it's a party that is in desperate need of having someone other than guys that look like Kevin McCarthy, standing in the background.
A lot of letters. Let's get to as many as we can here before we go up to the top of the hour. Paul weighs in and says, is this possible? From the beginning of his candidacy, it has been obvious to many, if not most, people that Trump was at very least unhinged and unpredictable. Over the last 3 years, the exodus of integrity from this White House has been well documented. I don't doubt the intelligence of anyone who surrounds the president. Honestly, I choose to believe that all of these people are smart and of sound mind, which makes the obvious agenda much more troubling. My question is this. Why? Why aren't there more whistleblowers? At what point does someone sense the water circling the drain and decide to cooperate? Why are the people so loyal to this crook in chief?
You mean why aren't there more whistleblowers? That's been my question all along, and I think there comes a balance at which somebody goes home to dinner, his or her spouse says to them, hey, this could be the end for you, and they say, I got to get out. And that's why I think watching Volcker and what he says, it becomes very important. He quit. Something was very dangerous to him.
For the author of that letter, let me see if I can put some of this into perspective. You know, here in Albany County, when there's a homicide and there's a shooting in a particular community, you know, you're asking an awful lot of individuals who witnessed those crimes to come in and to walk into open court and identify very dangerous people who may live right around the block from them. So
exactly.
We don't ask people to come forward and cooperate with us without understanding just exactly what that will mean for them. When you're talking about whistleblowers in the current environment that is Washington, D.C., you're not just talking about losing your job. You're talking about having the entirety of this sick group of sycophantic supporters of this president attempt to destroy you on social media, destroy your reputation, prohibit you from finding other work, and perhaps even threaten your family.
So is there a tipping point? Is there a tipping point?
Yeah, I think there's a tipping point. I mean, you know, I've seen whistleblowers in my community. The activities they were blowing the whistle on were nothing compared to what we're at. They were usually procedural, you know, inadvertent collection that wasn't properly processed, where American citizens got swept up. Little minor things like that that the IG usually resolves and that internal investigations usually resolve. This person, whoever he or she was in the White House, saw the activities that were going on, and then saw the cover-up using this extremely top secret server. I can't emphasize to you how deep top secret that server is. All of the most covert operations, only eyes only to the president for authorization, were in that computer, and they hid general confidential information in there in order so that no one could access it. And you do that in front of me or someone who has real integrity, and I realize you're hiding a betrayal to the United States, you know, this is going to be way
better
than
that.
So
why did he
do it? Because he couldn't take it. He could not stand the corruption, and he saw them abusing this. Not only that, that was a political document that was held with clandestine and covert information. It could be expose real lives of real people, but you know what? He couldn't take it, and he went to the IG, and the IG saw it was real and credible. My question is, what else is on that server that they're hiding? And that's why we're going to be blowing way past December on this one.
Will we hear lock him up chants at the rallies because of
you may
the
well,
president
and
server?
You should.
All right, we have a ton of letters. I really do want to get to them. So we're going to take a break. We'll come back. We'll get to the letters. We'll be right back. It's B.B. King on the Roundtable bumper music this morning. We have a lot of letters. We're going to get right to them. Here we go. From Lee, I am reluctant to anoint the speaker a genius for her reluctance to investigate given what polling data suggests and the directionality of trends. She only has to be more rational than Trump. Harumph. Quote. The data is directing her and the chairperson's actions and to what degree. Wild hair theory. I see it plausible now that Ukraine/Russia oligarch money made its way into RNC reelection fund since 2016. What say you, panel?
Well, I mean, it's quite possible that these you have to understand something. There's a key note here that I think that Rudy Giuliani has been very, very clear that he's protecting. That's Paul Manafort. They have been saying that Manafort was unfairly convicted and that this was related to that. I would not be surprised, since Manafort was working for the pro-Moscow government, this prosecutor who the entire Western world wanted out was a pro-Moscow government holdover in the Poroshenko regime, and that Manafort is the one who tipped Rudy off on this a couple of years ago to go to this oligarch, and he will give you all the answers. These oligarchs are all pro-Moscow, and they want to topple the pro-NATO, pro-European Union regime over there. So this technically is the long game from Vladimir Putin. So was there oligarch money involved in this? Of course there is.
Russ writes and asks about a search warrant. If the White House refuses to comply to turn over requested documents, could the FBI get a search warrant to enter the White House and get them?
FBI operates under the executive branch. Yeah. So the odds of that ever happening, no. But there are also a lot of constitutional issues woven in there.
Bob?
Real quick, I think they could actually go to the CIA and say, we want everything on your server pulled. You're classified on that server pulled because it belongs to the CIA's cloud and constantly encrypted cloud network. So with the right orders.
And that's after Barr manages to dip himself in an ocean and find clarity and come back and decides that he's going to function with a conscience.
Bob writes and says, since the Democrats are now construing failure to testify and subpoena or provide accurate information as grounds for contempt and contributing to the impeachment argument, where is Richard Neal in the Taxation Committee, which has overextended its patience and become downright slow-footed in what itself could be grounds for impeachment?
We have to not conflate the issues. This is not a pig pile on the impeachment. Stay focused on what this president has done with Ukraine and stay focused on that issue and that issue alone.
Peter has this question about impeachment. Suppose the impeachment is completed by December and the Senate does not convict. Can a president be impeached twice?
Double jeopardy on impeachment. The issue here is people oftentimes confuse impeachment. Impeachment is just an indictment. And the ground rules for what the Senate is going to do will be laid out prior to parties presenting their evidence. And so the timeline for that is going to be established prior to the attorneys that the House will eventually employ to do it. So we'll know the direction that they're going by the rules that are established by the Senate before they even take testimony.
I don't understand.
Just one thing, Mr. District Attorney, and that was you just said it's an indictment. We get a lot of mail thinking it is an indictment. It isn't. It's a political accusation as opposed to an indictment. There's an analogy, all right, but it's not the
same. It's an analogy. Yes.
But it's not a conviction, which is what many people think.
Yeah. Right. People tend to think of impeachment as a conviction. It's the beginning, not the end of a process.
Well, also,
it's not an indictment. An indictment is a formal charge, a criminal charge. This is not a criminal charge. It's a political charge.
I would file articles of censure every month after this if this fails. I would every month find some offense, and I would file a new article of censure against Donald Trump so that he would have like 40 by the time he left office.
All right, continuing with the letters, we go to Lori, who says, can someone explain why would he, Trump, I believe, make that phone call in front of anyone, let alone it be recorded or transcribed? Why would we expect Trump et al. To tell the truth under oath? The video of Trump with the Finnish president would be hilarious if it wasn't so sad and embarrassing.
He does it because he thinks he can get away with it, because he has gotten away with it, because he thinks it's right. I think he sees nothing wrong with what he said.
I think I refer to it a few times here on this show as masters of the universe attitude now. When Nancy Pelosi did not take him down for the Mueller 10 counts of obstruction of justice, as you said, he owns the universe and there's nothing you can do about it.
We got this from Lars. This is for you, Malcolm, because Lars is scared and says, could you speak about the Oath Keepers? They scare me.
Yeah, they're a scary group. And, you know, when I train Homeland Security personnel here in New York and other states, I often tell them that you will not be going to guns or getting in a gun battle with members of ISIS. Invariably, people who try to join ISIS are actually talking to the FBI. So we arrest them relatively quickly and early. It's the militiaman and people who think that they're empowered with an inherent right that was formed by the NRA, thinking that those rifles that they own are designed to overthrow the government. There is nothing in the Constitution about that or the Second Amendment. Groups like the Oath Keepers, who apparently have forgotten the oath when Barack Obama was president, but now want to apply it as a defense of Donald Trump. The Three Percenters, local militias, there's supposedly one in my New York 19 district, people getting together trying to prepare for the, you know, the end of American democracy if Donald Trump is put out of power. They are dangerous individually. You can't tell who's going to do what. But that's why we have police forces who have their own oath. We have state troopers. We have, you know, the state SWAT teams. If there is unrest and somebody decides that they are going to amplify that unrest through armed power, the state itself has armed power. One quick note, when they had the Shays Rebellion in Western Massachusetts during George Washington's period, George Washington himself ordered that the state militia bring cannons so that they would definitively end that rebellion. And that's precisely what happened.
Wilbur says, shift starts out the McGuire hearing last week blatantly lying to the public, and you think he has set the right tone, question mark?
I don't think he started out by lying to the public. I think he tried to make, perhaps you can question his strategy, but he tried to make the issue as perfectly clear as possible. And so I think those who are repeating the words lie, I think you need to look at the President of the United States.
Yeah, that's a right-wing talking point. That Schiff lied about that when he did his parody. Is that what the Wilbur's referring to? I mean, it was clearly a parody. It wasn't a very good one, I admit. But clearly the president does a lot more lying than Adam Schiff.
How damaging is it, because the president was making a big deal about it at the press conference yesterday. The question was worded incorrectly that was asked of the president by John Roberts. So it put the ball in the tee pretty good. But the reporting by the New York Times that Adam Schiff had some advanced knowledge of the whistleblower's complaint.
First of all, you got to discuss the issue in full context. We have a whistleblower that is in the White House who's fearful of being destroyed by the most powerful group of people on the planet. This person was curious and interested in knowing how to go about delivering that information to the appropriate body, which is the body that Adam Schiff happens to be to supervise. And
because they did not feel it was moving at all, given what they were currently doing.
Exactly. And so they directly reached out to the office. The office provided the absolute appropriate advice, which is contact a lawyer. And now that they've been made aware of it, you know, we're going to look for it coming from the inspector.
And it gets even a little bit more dangerous than that, because this president is so desperate to know who this guy is, or this person is. We don't know if it's a woman. That he keeps saying, I want to know him. I have a right to confront him. I want this and that. That really tells you where his head is at.
Well, he's doing that because there are literally millions and millions and millions of dollars that will be put into the propaganda machine that will work to discredit this individual before he ever provides testimony in front of any open
body.
It's
worse than discredit this individual. I mean, I've barely been involved in this, and I had 50 to 75 death threats in 1 year. This individual could be killed by these followers out there. And, you know, the CIA does not have the obligation to take active steps to protect this individual. But Donald Trump understands the power of personal intimidation. And, you know, he has clearly put out there twice, who will rid me of this troublesome priest? And there are people in this country who will definitely step up to do that. So this is I think it's another article of impeachment, his attempt to intimidate witnesses.
Yes.
There's also the you saw it just unravel in real time yesterday with the question, but then the president quickly said, "Oh, and by the way, Adam Schiff wrote the whistleblower's complaint." Mm-hmm.
The man can't tell the truth by opening his eyes. I mean, he is a pathological liar, and we all know that. And for him to suddenly just jump up and say, "Oh, well, that's what was being said," yeah, amongst your crowd, he I don't know why. The first words out of the press's mouth aren't that, "Mr. President, you have told 12,000 quantifiable lies. Why should we believe you?"
And the press is really struggling to deal with this effectively. We talked about...
Kudos to Jeff Mason yesterday, though.
Yeah, he's the Reuters reporter who tried and tried and tried to do follow-up questions to the president.
What information were you trying to get on the Bidens, and why?
He asked it again and again, and the president just unloaded on him in a way that was very unprofessional, to say the least.
I guess
I agree.
I was so impressed last week, or it might have been earlier this week, with Nicole Wallace when they broke away to the president's live press conference, and the president was lying. And then they broke right away from that, and she corrected it right there on the spot, which is a trait that Mr. Chuck Todd, if you're listening, you really need to start doing on your Sunday morning talk show, because I am so tired of watching these elected officials, these people, these puppets that are put out there to defend the president, get away with lying, and you more interested in getting to the next question than checking them on the lie that they're perpetrating to the people.
I couldn't agree with you more on that. He is, yes. It's almost a dereliction of duty.
Oh, Tim, you know, that show, I used to watch when Tim Russert used to do that show. And I would just sit there nervous in my chair because he would come out, whether it was a Democrat or Republican, he just pursued his questions, you know, equally with everyone. And I used to cringe because he would make me feel uncomfortable as a viewer. You don't see that anymore.
David says, I wonder if President Zelensky has the Ukrainian tapes and transcriptions of Trump's attempted shakedown. Ukraine Zelensky could release those tapes for the world to see. After all, that top secret server is not the only location or country where their conversation has been stored.
And why would he do that?
Yeah, I kind of feel sorry for Zelensky at this point. I mean, he is stuck in the middle, nowhere good to go.
I'll tell you why he'd do it. Because he just came out yesterday in favor, or the day before, of the Trump-pushed, Moscow-backed peace plan that would give away a quarter of his nation, will give the quarter of his nation the autonomy that they have been killing Ukrainian soldiers to get. And people are openly wondering and protesting daily who Zelensky really came in to support. And this plan, I mean, you know, they're in an active war with Russia. And, you know, by doing this, this will give Russia the same grounds that they used in Crimea to seize it, right? By saying, oh, ethnic Russians now have autonomy, and they want us to bring this back into Russia.
Okay, Malcolm, let's assume you're right. Zelensky releases the tapes in the context of what you're saying. How does he change it by releasing the tapes?
Well, he could change the dynamic that he is not, that all of his agreement to Donald Trump was not him being a sycophant in supporting Moscow's position, which it appears everything Trump said in that recording was Moscow's position, that the prosecutor was a good guy and was doing corruption. He was corrupt.
But what about the money? What about the money?
Which, oh, the money for the U.S. weapon system. That's all Zelensky can say, is that he wanted those weapon systems and that he was willing to do and say anything for it. But I'll tell you right now, he looks like he was playing with Trump on Trump's terms and has agreed to everything Trump wanted.
You're right.
His people
right.
can put him out of office tomorrow with another massive protest.
Not tomorrow. That's why we have regular elections, right? Not tomorrow.
Well, you have to remember the Maidan protests, which put out the pro-Moscow government back in 2004, if I'm not mistaken, was a mass people power that kicked out. I mean, those people are pretty pretty upset about this.
And so he doesn't get the money?
3 days of protests. I don't even know if he will get the money yet.
Yeah, but you don't know if, I mean, that's right. You don't know if he will, but you don't know if he won't. And if you put it out, more likely he won't.
If I was Zelensky, because one, even if we allocated that money right now, he only gets 35 missile launchers and 215 missiles. I would bet that a Biden government or a Warren government would be giving him thousands of those missiles and actively working with NATO to defend the Ukraine. That would be a better bet. I mean,
a long time between lip and cup.
Yeah, I mean, just saying, if I was a betting man, if I was Zelensky, I'd have that drop off in front of a truck from in front of the New York Times.
All right, a couple more letters. We go to Richard, who said, I watched President Trump's news conference in its entirety yesterday on Fox News. I was impressed that immediately upon the ending of the news conference, the Fox commentator fact-checked the falsehoods dropped by Trump. It was impressive how the commentator immediately called out Trump's lies. I also like that Fox showed a graphic during the president's remarks of the Dow Jones, and you could just watch the stock prices rise and fall in real time with the president's statements.
Yeah, I want to talk to this Fox thing. You know, always follow the money, follow the power. Murdoch owns Fox. All of a sudden, we see a healthy sort of back and forth between at least some of the commentators. That's because Murdoch wants it that way, in my mind. And that is very interesting to me.
Well, he also owns the Wall Street Journal, and they've been running away from Trump for the last several months.
Their news desk has been on fire this last week.
Yeah.
Exactly.
All right, and then there's James. He said, today's rhetoric, rants, is ignoring plain evidence of the phone call. There's nothing there. A typical contact with foreign leader of any president, give and take. Only haters like the panel read into anything.
That's just ludicrous. You know, I mean, if again, speaking as an old NSA operator who's listened with the headphones to a lot of stuff, if I transcribed that and I saw the President of the United States was essentially saying, you have to do me a personal favor, which violates U.S. law, it would be hands off the terminal, flash button to the IG, and let the, you know, let the political process handle it. This was...
Which is essentially what happened.
It was extortion. Extortion. If this were a mobster doing it to a grocery store here in downtown on Central Avenue, you would go after it the same way, wouldn't you?
Absolutely. And when Congress approves of dollars that are supposed to be provided to a foreign country for the purpose of protecting them against a common enemy, those dollars weren't approved on the condition that the president gets a personal favor out of letting those dollars go.
And I think we need to make clear that it's not right for the president to do this. He should not use the marshal the resources of the United States Treasury to try to have something happen that will help him get reelected. That seems like the bottom line morality here.
Not to mention the Rudy Giuliani connection. What is he? Who's paying him? Where's that coming from? His personal lawyer? Is it a campaign issue? Is it a is he investigating? The president seemed to intimate yesterday that there was action coming.
I'd actually like to go and see that reader's old emails because I'm sure he's still upset about Obama wearing the tan suit.
Wait a second. There's one more thing. There's one more thing here. The Republican talking points here, the Trump talking points are nothing improper happened there. We know a great deal of factual things happened. We know about Giuliani. We know about Barr. We know about all of that stuff. And so this business of nothing happened is just ludicrous.
Let me just...
They all admitted to it, but yes, we only have 30 seconds.
Okay,
go ahead.
So let me just read a couple of things that would warrant an impeachment, right?
In 30 seconds?
It's dishonesty, negligence, perjury of oath, abuse of authority, bribery, intimidation, misuse of public funds or assets, failure to supervise, dereliction of duty, tax evasion, refusal to obey a lawful order, chronic intoxication.
All right, we're going to end there. Thank you very much, everybody.